Om Agyanati Mirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 4, Text 8, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Founder Acharya of ISKCON. Translation. O learned Brahmana, the transcendental activities of the Lord are all wonderful, and they appear inconceivable because even great endeavors by many learned scholars have still proved insufficient for understanding them. Purport. The acts of the Supreme Lord in the creation of just this one universe appear inconceivably wonderful. And there are innumerable universes, and all of them are aggregated together, and all of them aggregated together are known as the created material world. And this part of his creation is only a fractional portion of the complete creation. The material world stands as a part only, ekang shena stito jagat. Supposing that the material world is a display of one part of his energy, the remaining three parts consist of the Vaikuntha jagat, or spiritual world described in the Bhagavad Gita as Madhama or Sanatan Dhamma, or the eternal world. We have marked in the previous verse that he creates and again winds up the creation. This action is applicable only in the material world because the other greater part of his creation, namely the Vaikuntha world, is neither created nor annihilated, otherwise the Vaikuntha Dham would not have been called eternal. The Lord exists with Dham, his eternal name, quality, pastimes, entourage, and personality are all a display of his different energies and expansions. The Lord is called Anadi, or having no creator, and Adi, or the origin of all. We think in our own imperfect way that the Lord is also created, but the Vedanta informs us that he is not created. Rather, everything else is created by him. Narayana Parovyaktat. Therefore, for the common man, these are all very wonderful matters for consideration. Even for great scholars, they are inconceivable, and thus such scholars present theories contradictory to one another. Even for the insignificant part of his creation, this particular universe, they have no complete information as to how far this limited space extends, or how many stars and planets are there, or the different conditions of those innumerable planets. Modern scientists have insufficient knowledge of all this. Some of them assert that there are 100 million planets scattered all over space. In a news release from Moscow dated 2/21/60, the following piece of knowledge was relayed. Russia's well-known professor of astronomy, wait for it, the name that you all know very well, Boris Vorontsov Veliaminov. You all know that name, right? He was well-known. He went on an easy journey to other planets in the meantime. Probably his space rocket went like that, down to the lower planets. Anyway. The well-known professor of astronomy by the name of Boris Vorontsov Veliaminov said that there must be an infinite number of planets in the universe inhabited by beings endowed with reason. It could be, this is being presented as knowledge, it could be that life similar to that on Earth flourishes on such planets. Doctor of chemistry Nikolai Zhirov, covering the problem of atmosphere on other planets, pointed out that the organism of a Martian, for instance, could very well adapt itself to normal existence with a low body temperature. He said that he felt that the gaseous composition of Martian atmosphere was quite suitable to sustain life of beings which have become adapted to it. End of quote. This adaptability of an organism to different varieties of planets is described in the Brahma Samhita as Vibhuti Bhinnam. That is, each and every one of the innumerable planets within the universe is endowed with a particular type of atmosphere, and the living beings there are more perfectly advanced in science and psychology because of a better atmosphere.
Technology, yeah.
Hmm?
And you read psychology.
I hear it's written psychology, and in your translation it says technology.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Okay.
Check it out in the BBT Translators Conference. Vibhuti means specific powers, and Bhinnam means variegated. Scientists who are attempting to explore outer space
and are trying to reach other planets by mechanical arrangements must know for certain that organisms adapted to the atmosphere of Earth cannot exist in the atmosphere of other planets. Easy journey to other planets. One has to prepare himself, therefore, to be transferred to a different planet after being relieved of the present body, as it is said in the Bhagavad Gita. Yanti deva vrata devan pitrin yanti pitrivataha bhutani yanti bhuteja yanti mad yajino pimam. Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. Those who worship ghosts and spirits will take birth among such beings. And those who worship me will live with me. Maharaj Parikshit's statement regarding the workings of the creative energy of the Lord discloses that he knew everything of the process of creation. Why then did he ask Shukdev Goswami for such information? Maharaj Parikshit, being a great emperor, a descendant of the Pandavas, and a great devotee of Lord Krishna, was quite able to know considerably about the creation of the world, but that much knowledge was not sufficient. He said, therefore, that even greatly learned scholars fail to know about that even after great effort. The Lord is unlimited, and his activities are also unfathomed. With a limited source of knowledge and with imperfect senses, any living being up to the standard of Brahmaji, the highest perfect living being within the universe, can never imagine knowing about the unlimited. We can know something of the unlimited when it is explained by the unlimited, as it has been done by the Lord himself in the unique statements of the Bhagavad Gita, and it can also be known to some extent from realized souls like Shukadev Goswami, who learned it from Vyasadeva, a disciple of Narad. And thus, the perfect knowledge can descend by the chain of disciplic succession only, and not by any form of experimental knowledge, old or modern. In the class I gave previously here this time, I was saying how we have to understand knowledge of Krishna's greatness before we can properly begin to appreciate his sweet and intimate loving dealings. So I'd like to elaborate on that a little more. That why Parikshit Maharaj is presenting such queries to Shukadev Goswami. It's not that you study about Krishna's greatness more and more and more and more, and all of a sudden something goes ding in your brain, and then you can appreciate Krishna's sweetness. Rather, if we hear about Krishna in his greatness from devotees like Shukadev Goswami, then hearing about his greatness will automatically awaken loving feelings for Krishna. Yasyam vai shuyamanayam Krishna paramapuruṣe bhaktirud padyate pungsa shoka moha bhayavaha. Prabhupada translates this verse that simply by hearing about Krishna, the Supreme Person, then bhakti in this verse he translates as loving feelings for Krishna will arise within the heart and dispel all fear, lamentation and illusion. This is the difference about hearing the greatness, about the greatness. One of the differences about hearing about the greatness of God from those who are in a mediocre level of religion and those who are on the topmost platform like Shukadev Goswami. Mediocre religionists emphasize the greatness of God, and though they say you should love God, they emphasize more that you should fear Him. He's good, He's great, so if you don't do what He says, then He'll smash you. So be careful. Or in the words of a song that we were supposed to sing at the Catholic school I went to, God speaking, I will smite him ad infinitum. Translate that into Czech, if you can.
It's about, yeah.
God's sitting up in heaven.
Smash. Yeah.
God's sitting up on a cloud, feeling angry as usual. Sitting down, looking down, and throwing thunderbolts at all the bad people on earth. Now, this is based on a very primary understanding of God, which virtually amounts to a misunderstanding. But actually God is the supreme loving person. And Shukadev Goswami is a devotee situated on the topmost platform of loving Krishna, as is Parikshit Maharaj. So, as will be commented, as Sutta Goswami will
comment a little later.
Potom, jak bude
komentovat. Shonak Rishi will comment that when Sutta and Parikshit met, there must have been discussion of the loving pastimes of Krishna. This is the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam. There are 10 subjects defined, but they can be understood in 2 main categories. That is, tattva-jnana and rasa-jnana, knowledge of Krishna's position and knowledge of his loving dealings. That means tattva-jnana means knowledge of Krishna's ontological position and then knowledge of his personality. Out of these 2, ultimately knowledge of, not only knowledge, but interacting with Krishna in loving dealings is ultimately more important. That's why we see that in Vrindavan, the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they're not very much concerned with knowledge of how Krishna is creating the universes. They don't, even if they know about that, then their loving feelings for Krishna that subordinates that knowledge in their consciousness. They're not concerned with Krishna's creating the universes. They're more concerned with feeding him, what's he going to eat tonight for his supper. But to reach that platform of understanding Krishna, it is for us who are completely devoid, conditioned souls who are devoid of any knowledge of Krishna, it is first necessary to understand his position. And understanding his position also means understanding our position in relationship with him. This is called sambandha jnana, knowledge of relationship. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu summarized that very simply, jivesvarupoi Krishna nityadas, the position of the jiva, the limited soul, is the servant of Krishna. Because Krishna's position is Krishna Surupoi Jive Nitya Prabhu. He is always the master of the living beings. So these are the subject matters of Bhagavatam, as described in the beginning of Bhagavatam, that what is the position of Krishna? Janmadya Sayaton Vyad Itratas Chatesh Pabhignaswarat. In one verse, the majesty, greatness, and inconceivable, wonderful position of Krishna is summarized at the beginning of Bhagavatam. And it is emphasized in the second verse of Bhagavatam. Okay. Who can understand this subject matter? That this is not for pretentious people. This knowledge is not to be understood simply by experiment and study, but by purification of heart. Persons who are Nirmad Saranam Satam, freed of envy, they can understand. And that will give them entrance into rasa, or sweet loving relationships and dealings with Krishna. So, Pibhata Bhagavata Rasa Malayam, those who are Nirmad Saranam, those who are free from envy or endeavoring to be free from envy, they're enjoined to go on drinking this Bhakti Rasa, as found in Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, here Parikshit Maharaj is asking Shukadev Goswami to explain about the greatness of Krishna. But it's not appreciating that greatness of Krishna when it's heard from a devotee like Shukadev Goswami that gives rise to loving feelings about Krishna. Here Parikshit Maharaj is expressing the Lord is Adbhuta Karmanaha. His activities are wonderful. And durvibhavyam, inconceivable. So much so that it's inconceivable even to great scholars. Simply by academic endeavor, it is not possible to understand the greatness of Krishna. But it is possible to understand by bhakti, by devotion, by which the Lord reveals himself. Prabhupada always translated bhakti as devotional service. Generally, scholars translate bhakti as devotion, but Prabhupada, to make it more clear, translated as devotional service. Atashri Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Grahyam Indre Sevan Mukhe Hijivadu Swayam Eva Spuratya Daha. Krishna is inconceivable. His name, form, qualities, and pastimes cannot be understood by any material endeavor. But for those who are sevanmukh, inclined to serve Krishna, then he reveals himself to them.
Sevanmuk is the opposite of Bahyamuk. This word was quoted in the last two Srimad Bhagavatam classes. This word Bahyamuk, which means turning one's face away from Krishna, becoming inimical to Krishna, ignoring or avoiding Krishna. Sevanmuk means that one can actually relate to Krishna only in the attitude of service. If we are to reciprocate with Krishna, it must be in a mood of service. If we are thinking how to enjoy Krishna, then Krishna will not reveal himself. So the only way to understand Krishna is by bhakti, which means devotional service to Krishna. He is the master, we are servants. This is impressed upon us by hearing about his greatness, how he creates innumerable universes. However, we see, as expressed by Parikshit Maharaj here in this verse, that hearing about his greatness doesn't give rise to fear, but it gives rise to feelings of wonder, of appreciation of Krishna's wonderful position. So hearing about Krishna's wonderful activities in the matter of creation, hearing about that from great loving devotees like Shukadev Goswami, will give rise in the hearts of those who are sevanmukh, inclined to service, that will give rise to loving feelings for Krishna. And like I was saying, it's not that just you hear about Krishna's greatness and then a bell goes off in your brain and then you enter into the rasa. It's not exactly like that. Rather, from the very beginning of Bhagavatam, even while the tattva-gyan, or knowledge of Krishna's greatness, is being described, that is being described in a manner which is full of devotional feelings. And even we find in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, which is describing Krishna's wonderful intimate pastimes, we also find there repeatedly descriptions of Krishna's greatness. There are so many prayers in the Bhagavatam to Krishna, for instance by Indra, Brahma, Akrura, who are describing the greatness of Krishna. So even in hearing the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, the reader or the hearer is constantly reminded of Krishna's greatness. And the same conclusions are presented in the 10th canto. Atapi te deva padambujadvayam prasadale shanugrihita eva hi janati tatvam bhagavangs mahimno nachanya ekopi chirang vijinvan. That Lord Brahma, who himself is the Adi Kavi, the original learned person in this verse, Kavis are mentioned, learned people. So even though he's the original and most learned person within the universe, he expresses to Krishna that without getting a drop of your mercy, no one can understand you. Prasada lesha anugrihita eva hi. Unless, without accepting that mercy through the parampara system, one cannot understand Krishna. One cannot, janati tattvam, he's used this word tattvam, one cannot understand the position of Krishna or his greatness, bhagavangs mahimnaha. Even if one is a great learned scholar and studies for many, many years, even the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they also know about Krishna's greatness. They may know, they may have some insights into it from time to time. But because their love for Krishna is so overwhelming, then in their minds they relegate that and they think of Krishna as their loving child or friend or lover. So this understanding, knowledge of Krishna, it is for the devotee is not simply some dry process of accumulating knowledge. That dry process of accumulating, shushka gyan, dry knowledge, that is rejected by devotees. What is that? Arasagya kak chushe, gyana nimba phale, rasagya kukil kai, primamra mukule. This, the learned scholars without knowledge of Krishna, they are like crows. They're simply, what they're eating, the crows, they like to eat neem fruits, which are horribly bitter. So they find, just like the crow finds pleasure in eating
bitter neem fruit. So the persons who are like crows, they devoid of loving feelings for Krishna, they like to study things like seven-legged animals at the bottom of the ocean, which knowledge is of no use to them or anyone else, or the seven-legged animals for that matter. But they say knowledge for knowledge's sake. They get some kind of pleasure out of that.
Potěšení.
Just like the crows get pleasure out of eating neem fruits. There's another kind of bird which looks quite similar to a crow. It's called kokil, which is cuckoo, it's translated as. Kokil. It's translated as cuckoo, though it's a little, it's not the same as a kind of cuckoo you get around here. So that, the crow makes a very harsh noise. Ka, ka, ka. Whereas the kokil sings very sweetly and nicely. So the kokil, the devotee is compared to the kokil, who sings very nicely, and he eats the buds of the kokil bird actually likes to eat the buds of the mango tree. So devotees, you don't know what mangoes are.
Nowadays, there are some.
Yeah, you get them imported here, but they're useless. They don't have any flavor. So, Premam, the kokil, sweetly singing bird, he is compared to the devotee who is rasagya. He is knowledge of the loving relationships and dealings of Krishna. So devotees, it's not that they're not learned. They may also study the material world, but only in as much as is necessary to live in it and to appreciate and to increase their appreciation of Krishna. Even if one wants to study as a scientist, the Bhagavatam gives scope for that. That if you have that inclination, do so, but that should be for the bringing out what is the greatness of Krishna. Idam hipung sas tapasasyutasya va svishtasya suptasya cha buddhidatayoho abhichuta artho kavibhya nirupita ya uttama shloka gunanavananam. Prabhupada said this verse should be the motto of the Bhaktivedanta Institute. Again the word is used, kavibhi, the kavis, the learned scholars. That those who have inclination to study or perform austerities or to study the Vedic literature, whatever it may be, they should do so for the sake of glorifying Krishna. Prabhupada often, from this verse, he used to emphasize the word nirupitaha. It is ascertained. It is not that in the name of speaking knowledge, one should speak all speculative nonsense. Just like Prabhupada said that science means to observe, hypothesize, experiment, and then determine what is the fact. But Prabhupada said the modern scientists, they simply observe, and then they speak all nonsense. So they can only go as far as, I think, here in this purport it's quoted, I think the well-known scientist feels, that's not science. But Prabhupada would quote, nirupita, it is ascertained. This is actual science. Bhagavat tattva vijnana. This is scientific knowledge of the absolute truth. Just like we were just discussing that people would say to Prabhupada, Swamiji, what do you believe? Do you believe in life after death? And Prabhupada would say, it is not a question of belief, it is a fact. People feel very nervous when you say like this. Because according to their way of thinking, we're always trying to find out the truth, and we're always searching different opinions and considering others' opinions. And it is a paradox of the modern academic ethos that everyone is searching for knowledge, but no one's actually supposed to ever find it. They always say that, well, actually, we have to consider that our theories may be refined more in future. Although they present their theories as facts, which is another kind of cheating, they're not honest, they're dishonest. Even though it's actually a very good, if we want to take it as a hypothesis of reality, that there is a supreme, intelligent, powerful being, actually all observed phenomena fit with that hypothesis. The atheistic worldviews, there are so many difficulties with them. There are so many different theories about how the universe came out of nothing, for instance. This is one of the great theories of modern science, that there was nothing and all of a sudden there was everything. Very scientific. They have pages of mathematics to back it up. There are so many different theories, but their theories, they all run into different problems and they're always having to modify them. And then every so often someone comes along with a so-called discovery which destroys all their old theories, and then they have to make another set of theories based on their new so-called discovery. However, even if we take it as a hypothesis that everything that exists is designed for a purpose and put in place with specifically by an intelligent, powerful person overseeing everything, then as a scientific hypothesis, everything observed fits with it, but they won't even consider. This is not very scientific. Prabhupada called it rascaldom. There's no need to put any big, long scientific term on their rascaldom, because it's just rascaldom, that's all. Newcomers to Krishna consciousness may be surprised as to why devotees are always smiting or banging on the heads of the mundane, atheistic, so-called scholars and scientists. As Suhotra Maharaj pointed out the other day, Prabhupada had recommended it as part of our sadhana, that the more we kick on the faces of the atheistic scientists, the more we advance in Krishna consciousness. So that is actually required because, as he was also quoting, our brains are full of stool. Actually, that's what Prabhupada said. We require to be brainwashed because our brains are full of stool. And what is that stool? That is all the atheistic theories that have been directly and indirectly pounded into our brains, we say brain, actually into our consciousness, since the day we were born, or even before that, even in the womb. And unless we continue, even after practicing Krishna consciousness for many years, unless we continue to kick on the faces of atheistic scientists, then we will find that they're kicking back on our face. It's just like we have to chant Hare Krishna. If we think we come to a point, well, now I don't need to chant Hare Krishna anymore. I already made it. I'm fully Krishna conscious. No need to chant Hare Krishna anymore. So if we think like that, then we'll find ourselves swimming in the material ocean again. Not swimming, drowning. Because although in the beginning stages of Krishna consciousness, chanting Hare Krishna may be a sadhana to fix us in Krishna consciousness, when we're fixed in Krishna consciousness, then we also like to chant Hare Krishna. So if we say that now I don't need to chant Hare Krishna, that means that we haven't at all attained to Krishna consciousness. So in the same way, if we think, well, now I don't need to hear any more about how material life is miserable, how material life is simply cheating, how all these atheistic theories are simply for fooling us all, then what will happen is that we will again become infected by these atheistic theories. And we practically see within our movement that devotees who neglect to follow basic principles of Krishna consciousness, including reading Srila Prabhupada's books, that they may think, well, now I should only read about the highly elevated pastimes of Radha and Krishna. But for all their so-called elevation, they end up eating chocolate and watching soccer on TV and things, stupid things like that. Mm. And talking Rasa Katha now and then between puffs. Because we need to regularly hear about the Tattva Gyan or Bhagavat Tattva Vigyan, knowledge of the scientific knowledge of the Absolute Truth, Mukta Sangasya. And even if we are freed from misconceptions, then a devotee, he desires to free others from those misconceptions. Prabhupada explained in one purport that devotee of Krishna means he becomes like a friend of Krishna, and he doesn't like to see his friend insulted or spoken bad about, and therefore preaches Krishna consciousness to drive out this rascaldom out of the world. How can someone say, I love Krishna, and all around people are insulting Krishna and you don't say anything? Then where is your love? That's not love. So love for Krishna means one should go out into the world and preach this message of Bhagavat Tattva Vigyan, scientific knowledge of the Absolute Truth. And practically, we just like that example given of a devotee in Sri Lanka. Prabhupada was so pleased that he defeated the rascal scientist. Actually, Prabhupada, we don't see that he was very pleased when his disciples started to discuss so many elevated topics. He was pleased when they kicked on the faces of atheistic scientists. He was very pleased. There's one story, there was Svavas Prabhu, he told us that he was on a morning walk with Prabhupada and he thought, I want to say something to Prabhupada at least once in my, I don't know if I'll ever get a chance, let me say something to Prabhupada. So different devotees on the morning walk were talking about Krishna and the gopis and the different high relationships, and Prabhupada didn't seem to, he didn't want to get into a conversation with them about it. Then Svavas, he interrupted and said, Prabhupada, we're your disciples and we're distributing your books at the airport every day. And we're trying to distribute each, every day, 100 big books. We're not able to do it every day, but we're trying and we're praying for your mercy that we can do it. And Prabhupada smiled, a big smile, and said, yes, this is a real disciple. Simply thinks how to serve and please his spiritual master. So in understanding this great ocean of transcendental knowledge that is Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad cult, those who are Prabhupada Anugas, followers of Srila Prabhupada, they try to follow, try to understand how Prabhupada wanted us to follow, how he presented Krishna consciousness. With great faith that Prabhupada knows Krishna and he knows how to give us Krishna. And that if we simply follow in the way that Prabhupada enjoined us to follow, then certainly we shall attain Krishna. Shri Guru Charane Rati Eishe Utamagati Jai Prasade Puri Sarva Asha. That attachment to the lotus feet of one's spiritual master, that is in and of itself the topmost attainment by which all desires are fulfilled. That means spiritual desires. And we see practically that Prabhupada, although undoubtedly the topmost devotee on the topmost platform of devotional service, he took great pleasure in discussing these points and establishing how Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In defiance of all bhogis, yogis, rogis, and so-called scholars. Bhogi means yogi. Materialistic enjoyer. Yogi means so-called yogi in this context. Rogi means a diseased person, mentally diseased. So Prabhupada stood against the world. He wasn't trying to make the Hare Krishna popular club. He wanted to establish Krishna as the Absolute Truth, which is intrinsically that must be unpopular with people who have come to this material world to reject Krishna. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said that even if the whole world goes against me, and even if nobody ever agrees with me, and even if all my disciples leave me, I will not for one moment stop speaking the Absolute Truth. That is my only duty. Hare Krishna. Any questions? Comments?
That somehow he's bewildered that he heard how Tamal Krishna Maharaj left this world.
Is this related with the class, this question?
No.
Okay, can we have any questions related with the class?
Protože ona tahle otázka se nevztahuje k přednášce, tak radši bychom vzali nějaké otázky, které by se pojily s přednáškou.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we have some questions related
with the class? They said that for understanding Krishna one needs a drop of mercy, and from out of all of these people who are trying to study Krishna consciousness, not everybody obviously has the drop of mercy. So is it not maybe for somebody better to start with trying to understand Brahman or some other things?
Why do you think they don't have mercy? How could they even be reading these books if they don't have mercy? Okay. The mercy is there available for everyone. It's up to us to accept it or not. That verse I was quoting in this regard, it states like that. Prasad alesha anugrahita over evahi. One has to accept that mercy. Any other question? Please.
But you said we should avoid even thoughts of enjoying Krishna. So how do I know that I may have such desires and how should I avoid them?
One should always cultivate very strongly the mood of service to Krishna. Devotees are enjoined to be introspective. It means to analyze one's own mental position. So one can do so and see what is my attitude. You see, Madhavendra Puri, he did that. He was thinking how to serve Krishna by offering the nice kheer or milk preparation that was being offered in the temple. He was thinking, if I could taste a little bit, then I will understand how to offer that to my deity. But he thought that within that thought there could be mixed some trace of enjoying mood. Therefore he condemned himself. So a devotee should always examine his motives. It's very important. Otherwise, sometimes in the name of devotional service, we're performing so many activities which it may be mixed, the desire to serve Krishna and the desire to